another episode of the Non Sequitur. Today we have our resident friend, Jesse Towson.
The only friend of the podcast so far.
Yes, to discuss some the newsroom, actually. So this isn't a spoiler alert. We haven't watched it yet, but we're...
any of it. We're just gonna make up everything of the whole season.
Isn't Tupac in this? Isn't he the lead?
Tupac plays the president, President Bartlett, yeah.
Right, that's what I figured. President Bartlett, that's right. That's great. I'm glad we have a working knowledge of this. But in all seriousness, we've been watching the show for the first season. For those who don't know, Aaron Sorkin's new show, The Newsroom on HBO. On Sunday nights, and it's been...
we've, of course, also seen every other episode of every other Aaron Sorkin show at least once.
Right. So. At least once. Well, if you're a sports night fan...
Highly.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, highly. Highly. We have high expectations. We definitely have high expectations. A lot of West Wing in our lives. I think that's probably, like, the only reason we're friends, I'm guessing. That and our love for... Our mutual love for Calvin Johnson. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and pretty much everything else.
Sports and life.
I was just going to say everything that one of us...
Let's get into it. All right, so it was the last episode. What are you expecting? How'd the episode before the last go? It was... because it's been like a three-part deal, right?
Yeah, so essentially the main thing is the tension throughout the whole series. They're trying to do the news right, and then Jane Fonda is not happy about it. And Jane Fonda playing the executive at ACB.
Well, we just call her Jane Fonda.
Right, and we like to think that it is actually just Jane Fonda who has decided to become a media emperor, I guess is the term.
Empress. Empress.
We'll go with Empress. Well, 21st century. We'll use gender neutral.
Gender neutral, baby. Anyway. Okay, Emperor. You're right.
Yes. So the eighth episode, which started off this two-parter, the ratings are falling.
Yeah,
three-parter, but they only, it's Sorkin's thing. He names the first two two-parter, and then the last one is more of the same story. So anyway, it started off, there's been a big murder case or rape case or some sort of sensational thing, and
Casey Anthony.
Casey Anthony. They dropped a ton, which really they really did nail having the name that sounds like it would be one of those cases. Like when I feel like if I was heard Casey Anthony, I would just be like, oh, that's what this. This is real news. Yeah, I don't follow these at all.
They do
but there we go.
They do
that makes
thing.
So much sense.
I know you.
Wait, do you mean that oil spill was real too?
Wait, it was like LP.
The oil spill was. Oh, but this means we killed Osama. So.
Right.
So that's awesome.
Oh, dang! That actually
that's
happened.
Awesome.
Just
anyway,
talking, I'm pretty
sure. So rather than making up a believable one, they picked a believable one because it actually happened.
Yes.
And basically, they don't cover it. They lose ratings. They agree to cover it, but only because they want to be able to host a presidential debate. They have a brand new debate format that will let them get real answers out of the presidential candidates rather than just hearing the 30-second sound bites. And meanwhile, Sloan, who wants to cover the debt ceiling crisis because she maybe unrealistically has seen this coming since the 2010 election of where the Tea Party wave came in. She's pissed off that she's losing time to cover it because of the Casey Anthony case.
As is everyone in the studio.
Right, as is everyone. Yeah. And in the second episode, they cover it, but kind of in their own way. Maggie's roommate inexplicably is friends with Casey Anthony. Like high school, went to high school with her.
Where did I come from?
Which was like, like the show.
A great time.
I know. Like I have defended this show against many of its criticisms in our own little conversations, but man,
yes,
that one
massive,
really
massive email chain.
Yeah, talk about a deus ex machina, like coming in the form of a character with whom there's lots of sexual tension. already. Like, you couldn't have done that, you know, any more cheesily. But anyway, she comes in and she talks about these cases, about basically the statistics behind the cases, and that's what they try to get her to do. And then she just kind of goes all the way into a discussion of abortion, you know, probably sharing views that many of the newsroom studio would agree with, but that was not the point of the assignment.
Right.
And then they don't get to debate anymore. So.
Yeah, because
it looks like a high school.
Looks like a
middle school play.
Yep.
They're wearing shirts to show which candidate.
It's like
if you're wearing a shirt that says like tree, so that people know that you're a
guys.
Tree. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's accurate. which I wanted to be a part of, and maybe one of the best lines from Sloan coming at the end of that episode, as well as from Maggie's boyfriend on and off thing. So that's what leads into this last episode, and we've got hit this climax. Is Jane Fonda going to fire Will McAvoy, who's the anchor of the show, as well as Mackenzie, I forget her last name, the producer of the show. And we're just kind of waiting on pins and needles. And then on top of this is, Sorkin's tapped into the whole wiretapping thing from News Corp and Murdoch. And so he's put it into Jane Fonda's empire, going all the way up to her son, who is pretty much like her right-hand man. At the studio or at the television station, and so it can be detrimental to the company and blah 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 and to Jane Fonda, and so Sam Waterston kind of has this information in the back of his head, but unfortunately in the last episode we find out that it's not completely substantiated, or there's a lot of holes in the witness or the testimony.
There are questions with the witness. With the testimony and also with his character, he had not done well on, you know, some character tests that the NSA conducted or something along those lines, so he's somewhat discredited.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, what do you think of this, of that plot? I mean, I think there have been, you know, about 30 high pro... Yeah, well, like, there have been so many plots that I think everything's a little underdeveloped right now, but, you know, do you think that this plot is doing... Is adding good drama to the show going into the finale?
I think it's good drama. I think it's the one other piece of less procedural and whatever the opposite of procedural dramas are. But the thing that's carried over through most of the arc, and this is kind of how it culminates the whole battle between Will McAvoy and his studio versus Jane Fonda and the press. I think it's pretty dramatic. I think it's a little over, as we've discussed with most of the newsroom, it's just pretty over dramatic in my mind. And I still liked it, but it takes it too far.
I think it's nearing the finale. They definitely try to raise the stakes so much. But this does sort of fit a formula that I think works a little bit, in that they raise the stakes in that it seems like everything could go wrong by the finale. You know, like, it seems like you could cancel the show because the show that they're making on the show gets canceled or something like that. But then there's also this possibility that something bigger, something better happens for them. And in this case, it would be, you know, as much as it would be bad for them, uncovering something like this could potentially be, you know, their biggest story yet or something like that.
Right.
And this one, I believe,
it's funny. They're trying to bite off their own tail, but they, in a good way, I guess, kind of like when dogs. No, that's never a good thing. But yeah, there's a lot of conflict there, right? There's a lot of conflict.
As long as we don't lose Jane Fonda, I'll be fine.
Yeah. She's not going anywhere. She's not going. She said maybe like, I think like maybe 20 words in her entire newsroom.
Well, she told that story about the golf.
I remember it. I remember it. It was good though. That was because
it had some strong swear words. that she delivered with quite a bit of power that I enjoyed.
We haven't talked nearly enough about the best character in, actually maybe second best. I'm a huge fan of clones, but Sam Waterston has just been nailing.
Yes. Oh, he. You know, I am completely like unaware of his entire career. I understand that he's like one of the most prolific television actors, like of
Law
the past 15
and
years, and probably way before then, and mostly from Law and Order. I've seen like one episode of Law and Order. And like I've talked to people who are like, man, Sam Waterston's like fallen off the edge. He can't even talk, and he is brilliant. He's so funny, and he's really good. You know, and when the drama is punched up, you know, two levels above where it maybe should be, he usually is able to make that realistic anyway, which is partly because he's sort of the, you know, he's the guy who's one level higher than them. Right. So when he steps So when he steps in, it has that level of pretense already. But he really delivers on it, and he's just so funny at you know, being honest, being about the truth. And I like that they, like, a lot of, you know, a lot of shows will play that overarching character as being, like, a bad guy at first, and then you realize that he's actually kind of on their side.
Yeah.
And Sorkin's last
Sports
show,
Night.
Studio 60, did that.
Sports Night
did that.
Yep.
And I liked it this time. They were like, you know, no, there's just a good guy there. And then, like, above them, there are people they have to deal with. But, like, this is just a guy who's on their side. And it's like, you know, I think it's probably more realistic, or not necessarily more realistic, but it's nice to not have that cliche one more time.
I agree. I had a thought when I was just thinking about the wiretapping plot and whatnot. What are your thoughts on the fact that we kind of know what's going to happen at the end of the season, because in the real world, it got renewed for a second season, so obviously it's coming back. And obviously it's very unlikely that a show called The Newsroom isn't going to be about producing news episodes next year in the new season.
Right, so we know they're not getting canceled.
Right. Whether that means they're going to a new new studio or a new station,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I can't see that happening. But in all honesty, they're building all this drama up. Is Will going to get the nod? He's going to have to stay. He's the main character of the show.
Yeah. I mean, I can't conceive of the show without Jeff Daniels. You don't want to just like, oh, let's jump six to season seven of The Office before we have to. It's possible that they change studios. I would say changing studios would be like pretty unprecedented, but Mad Men, you know, Mad Men has none of its original sets left. They went into their new, spoiler alert, anyone just starting season three of Mad Men, you know, they all quit and went into their new offices a while ago. So, you know, also an HBO show, they may be more willing to take risks and have the money to invest up front on, you know, developing new sets and stuff like that. But yeah, I do think that a certain amount of the show, you know, because they're following old news, because we know it's updated, we pretty much know what's going to happen, which is why I think them pumping the drama so high is more of a problem in this show than in other shows. Because if it were more about sort of the everyday challenges of doing the news well, there would be so much blank to fill in. But when it's, oh my God, did the U.S. kill Osama bin Laden? It's like, well, we know that they did. Or when it's like Gabby Gifford was not, like, yeah, I remember when I found that out, and like I, you know, solemnly ate pancakes at a Portuguese diner, Polish diner, not like, you know, like, I don't know. It's hard for me to find a lot of drama out of these things. But that's it. I like that they're covering old news and the way that they're doing it, because it can provide a reflection on those times. But they just could be doing it in a much more nuanced way, I think.
I think that's really interesting because I think there has been a lot of controversy over whether or not this whole covering the real news stuff has been good. And it just seems, I think the biggest criticism is like Sorkin is just using this to get his, you know, his own agenda out there. Whereas, you know, he might have had that, but he had to manage his, what he wanted to say in a much craftier way when he wasn't on HBO, when he was on NBC with West Wing, when he was whatever show, whatever station, station that Sportsnet was on. He had to find easier ways to, or different ways, a little bit more difficult of, conveying what he was putting in as his commentary. Whereas here it's like,
right.
Whatever.
His commentary is, I was going to say his commentary is what they're saying on the show, but I have been really frustrated by, I mean, I stopped reading reviews of this show altogether because even though I agreed that it was not that great of a show, at least to start and still now, I've been really frustrated by the criticism of it because, you know, you read these articles, they say the name Sorkin maybe, you know, 30 times in one review. And it's like Sorkin thinks that Sorkin tries to do that. And it's like, you know, I don't know. It's like Sorkin becomes this stand-in for I'm alone in life and I want to, you know, take down someone who people think is smart. And it's like the show needs to be sort of criticized on its own right and not like, oh, I see Sorkin's opinion. I'm going to cross this off as like him proselytizing or, oh, I see a stupid joke. I'm going to, you know, put this in as Sorkin being too into slapstick. Like, I think criticism needs to be a little bit more about the show and a little bit less about Sorkin. I mean, obviously there are so many continuations of the previous show and yes, he has been more upfront about putting in his own opinions in this, partly because it's about the news. But I wish that he did it a little bit more in a more nuanced way. I think the Will McAvoy being a Republican thing, like, just, they kind of botched it. There's no like indication that he's a Republican and he hasn't, we haven't like seen him as a conservative in a way that it would make it convincing. And then when he said it, it was like, oh, like really? Okay. So they're just saying that so that Sorkin doesn't have to be, doesn't have to be like writing about a liberal news crew, but. It was much more of a
tell not show. Yeah, they really just slipped it in, and it's not. I mean, to say it's a major part of the show is false. There's other than his one relationship that he had with that guy who was deciding whether or not to take on the debate or which station to
right.
debate on. That was the only real relevant piece to him being a Republican, I think.
Right, where they did the little like good Republican, bad Republican dynamic.
Right. Right. Which was nice. It was interesting to see that. Oh.
And one of them was like reasonable and one of them was like Tea Party.
and that clip at the end where
I had to go to IMDb.
Great, because you would have said that's what you were pausing.
Sorry,
for.
I lost you there for a second.
No worries. I want to talk more, but we got to run soon. But I want to call you back and I want to get your thoughts on is TV kind of like, has it become, this is past the newsroom, so it's maybe a good point to end on, but has TV become like the main medium that writers look to get across, whether it's their creativity, to their agenda? Because I understand, like, in the past, it's been these era-defining or maybe decade-defining movies that really writers use, I guess. But now it's like you get a show on HBO and all of a sudden you're in heaven. This, you know, writer can doesn't have to please writers, right?
It is interesting. I mean, I would say probably not in that, like, I don't think the dynamic has changed that much, but obviously, well, not necessarily obviously, but I do think that there's more good TV and even great TV out there right now than there has been in a long time. And that's been sort of the case over the past 4 or 5 years. But one thing that I do think is, you know, thinking about it in terms of the newsroom, is to comment on politics. I think TV in some ways is a lot more viable, because, you know, making a movie, a good movie, is really hard. And I don't think, you know, like the war in Iraq didn't get a really good, like, drama or comedy, you know, like non-documentary. It didn't get a really good fiction film about it until probably In the Loop, which came out 2009, 2010, something like that. And
okay,
I don't think that's because, oh, like, writers, artists were, you know, not being creative during that time. I think it's because making a good movie should take years, and if it takes less than years, it's probably, like, you know, it's probably came top down from the studio and is not exactly the kind of thing that we're looking for. But because you have room to experiment and to change the direction of your story throughout a TV season, I do think that maybe writers have a little bit more flexibility to comment on recent events, you know, on a totally opposite end of the spectrum in terms of drama comedy. It's like what South Park has been doing for 15 years is commenting on, you know, the news from a week ago, before even, like, you know, and then there's, like, Daily Show and Colbert that do it directly, but if we're taking it from more of a creative standpoint, they're satiring, or, yeah, satiring.
Satirizing,
there we go, recent events.
I got you.
Which I think you have some ability to do on television. I don't know, though. Do you think that, like, do you think that television has gotten more creative than films? Because I don't think that I would agree with that.
So I don't think more creative than films, because just in what you were saying and how films have to be, if the good ones have to take tons of time and tons of thought, and just by virtue of a television show, you know, producing whether weekly episodes or, you know, in seasons every year, you can't put your heart and soul that to that extent into a TV show. But I do think it's interesting to say it while we're in the times. But it seems like a really, like, not a golden age, but, like, a really good decade for TV. I mean, let's see.
Absolutely.
We've had Breaking Bad. We've had, did we count the Sopranos? No, that was last decade.
That was last decade. I also don't count Breaking Bad because that's the one show that everyone loves that I hate. But, you know, I'll let it go.
It's on Netflix.
Sorry,
unnecessary
jerk interruption. But Breaking Bad's terrible. All the reasons you think you love it are wrong. That wasn't directed at you, Aaron. That was directed at the American public.
That was directed just at me. We should have that podcast on the road too.
Because you're one of the few that just doesn't like Breaking Bad. I think our friend Will doesn't like Breaking Bad either. But it's pretty universally, like, a really the episodes I've seen have just been really well done. It's gotten, like, really great story.
I agree that, I mean, this is a digression, maybe, yes, as you said, maybe for another episode, but I agree that it is very well shot and very well edited. There are very few other things that I like about it.
You don't like the storyline and kind of those, the character elements, how they develop characters?
No.
So this is, I have to go, so this is what we'll end up. The thing that I like about Breaking Bad is the character development. Let me explain, and maybe you'll understand where I'm coming from. The fact that, the main character, the dad from Malcolm in the Middle, God, I can't remember his name in the show. Whatever, okay, so from my view, it's...
Brian Cranston.
And many people have... Okay. It's the story of a man who starts off letting sin or letting bad deeds enter his life in seemingly justifiable means, like justifiable reasons. He needs to make money, he needs to sell meth to make money for his cancer treatments and to feed his family. And then next he needs to cook more meth, you know, because he needs more money. And then, you know, other things develop, and slowly he's killing people. Slowly he's stealing and beating people up and becoming like this kingpin. And it's just this slow, just like
sin can just like seep through if you just let one piece in, and then all of a sudden another one. It's just like a slow digression into being, just letting that sin nature overcome you. And I think that's a really interesting, really well told metaphor, I think, for, and it's not quite a metaphor, but it's really well done in Breaking Bad and telling that story, I think.
I agree that it's interesting, at least as an idea, as a concept. I don't think that descent into evil, this idea of like going that, Breaking Bad that far, I don't think it's a real thing. I don't think that, I can't point to stories of like actual people who went from being Nobel Prize winners to getting involved in, to becoming high school chemistry teachers and then getting involved in like petty crime, and then all of a sudden they're killing people and running meth trades throughout New Mexico and have no concerns about it.
Malcolm in the Middle, the dad is actually Albert Einstein, if I remember that correctly.
That is a fact. And I mean, to me, there are all of these ways in which, like, I think that every time the show could choose between making a choice that would make it interesting and a choice that would make it badass, they choose badass, which is fine, but I don't necessarily need to, it's in its fifth season now, I don't necessarily need to devote 50 hours of my life to badass, because I get bored of it really quickly. It's like he doesn't, in the first season, he gets his friend Elliot, who he would like used to be science partners with, whatever, right, just offers to pay for all of his treatment, and he refuses it, like out of pride. But like that means we're now not weighing ruining everybody's lives by cooking this meth and then shooting people and all that stuff against keeping his family like financially stable and his own health. He's weighing it against like his pride with some guy who he doesn't see that often. Throughout, he just has so few regrets, and that might be fine if it were counterbalanced with a sidekick who had more of those or who had any interesting character traits. But instead, he's got Pinkman, who's this like just like still.
We'll have a full Breaking Bad tomorrow. Yeah. We hashed out
everyone.
Yeah, and pooped on everyone's Breaking Bad parade. But yeah, thanks for coming on, Jess. See what we think.
Absolutely. Can you hear me?
Okay, it's getting really choppy. I'll edit this part. Thanks for coming on. We'll go check out the newsroom tonight and probably figure out all this wiretapping stuff, or if it's just going to be a terrible cliffhanger until next season, which I would hate. Actually, I would really hate. But anyways, thanks. Any parting words?
Well, I don't know if you can hear me, but thank you. It's good talking to you.
Can you hear me? All right. Sounds good. You can hear me okay now. All right.
Okay.
Cool. Awesome. We'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon.